And is this the committee, Bill?
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and call the Senate Committee on Judiciary to order this bright and early Monday morning. Unfortunately, I have the news to give to you. We have work sessions scheduled for six bills. All six of them will not be able to move today. It is under my understanding that we do not have all the paperwork that's necessary, meaning fiscals and or revenue. So, Council, let's see, we do have, looks like, one possible measure for introduction, LC 2099.
So we do, Mr. Chairman of the Committee.
Looks like it's relating to marks used in commerce and declaring an emergency. Chair would entertain a motion for LC 2099 as committee bill.
Mr. Chair, I move LC 2099 be adopted as a committee bill.
Senator Bonamici moves LC 2099 as a committee bill. Is any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And at this point, what I think we'll need to do is, Mr. Taylor, we have our agenda. Which ones did you want to start off with?
Chairman of the Committee, we probably should walk through all of them. I would start off with Senate Bill 87, which would require mental health care provider to notify the appropriate county medical examiner of a death and provide medical records, tissue samples, and other necessary material if requested to do so. We have the Dash 2 and the Dash 3 amendments in front of you, which I believe the ACLU and the Criminal Defense Bar, Gail Myers and Andrea Myers worked out with the agency people. The main difference that I can tell between the Dash 2 and the Dash 3 is that clarifies that anyone who cooperates with the medical examiner does not waive any claim of privilege or confidentiality of the material and record is provided. Clarifies that except for parent, child, spouse, or suspect in a murder investigation, medical records can only otherwise be released by court order. The main difference that I could see between the two and the three is that the three also allow release to siblings. I see people shaking heads. I see the Dash 3 late Friday. I think it would be best that we bring up the interested parties and have them explain the amendments. I did not participate in the...
Yeah, I agree. And looking at the Dash 2 and Dash 3, I'm taking a guess they both probably need to go into the bill. They look like they're dealing with different lines of the bill. So what we're going to do is open this work session on Senate Bill 87. And for those who worked in the work group who want to come forward and give us their perspectives for the Dash 2 and Dash 3 amendments. And Senator Wisson, we're not going to be able to move anything today because we don't have the fiscal statements back here.
Okay. For the record, my name is Dr. Karen Gunson. I'm the state medical examiner for Oregon. And Chair Brzezinski, we, OSP, worked with ACLU and the Defense Bar on Dash 2 amendments and Dash 3 amendments. The Dash 2 amendment, we inserted health care provider as defined by ORS 192.519 to address the issue of those who must cooperate with the death investigations. There was all these questions raised about the most appropriate definition of mental health professionals. So we look to 192.519 because it's very broad and inclusive in, and very clear as to who all the various health care providers are. And it includes both medical health care providers and mental health care providers, pharmacists, naturopaths, chiropractors, and all the various types of mental health care providers. And it's clearly defined. So we felt that this was the best answer for the question of how to define mental health care provider. So we also added, at the urging of ACLU and Defense Bar, the language that expressly preserves any claim of privilege, confidential, or right of non-disclosure. And with specific references to the decedent, we will have added the proposal that only that mental or the medical records that we get can only be given to somebody under a court order, so they're protected. in that way.
All right, thank you. And then on the, let's see, the dash threes.
Yes, the dash three amendment is one that we added, OSP added, because on December 24th of 2008, the Oregon Court of Appeals ruled that information and records of the medical examiner related to death investigations are public records, and the site is Craig Colby versus Karen Gunson, State Medical Examiner. Prior to this ruling, the records of the medical examiner were always treated as confidential and not subject to public disclosure. The impacts of this ruling were raised during our discussions of potential amendments to Senate Bill 87. One of the big impacts would be a fiscal impact to our office. Right now, we have a staff of 9 people. We have 4 forensic pathologists, actually 5 forensic pathologists. I'm sorry, 4. And we have 1 office manager, 2 medical transcriptionists, 1 office specialist, 2, and 1 morgue attendant. We receive about 200 requests a month for public or for copies of our records related to death investigations from families and people who are civilly or criminally liable. We conservatively estimate that we would be receiving about 800 requests if our records became public records. And this, of course, would increase the number of people that we would need to handle those requests. We are estimating that we would need two new staff or OS2s to cover those requests, and it would cost us between $150,000 and $210,000, and that is not in the governor's recommended budget. We think there's a very much of an impact on public policy concerning the disclosure of these medical records. All of our death investigations records are considered to be medical records, and they really contain intimate medical details of the deceased person. In fact, Dash 2 amendment was crafted to actually protect these medical records from public scrutiny at the request of ACLU and the defense bar. We have no way of maintaining the confidentiality of these medical records if they're public records and open to anyone. I'm also concerned because, like every other state in the union, we order autopsies on people that we think need to be done, or we think autopsies need to be done on people who are under our jurisdictions: homicide, accidents, suicides, drug overdoses. And for the most part, we receive great cooperation from families because they really want to know how their loved one died. And they believe that they get information from that and that it's good for the public to know, or for us to have those records, for us to understand how people die. I anticipate that if they know that those records are going to be public records, there will be a lot of pushback from families where they will not want autopsies to be done for fear that that autopsy will be given to their neighbor or to the newspaper or whoever. Finally, there's a couple of notes. Death certificates in Oregon are the cause and manner of death on death certificates in Oregon are not public record. And so this would directly conflict with that particular law that is ORS 432.121, which holds that cause and manner of death are confidential. We do about anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000, maybe even 2,500 death certificates a year under our jurisdiction. And of course, all of that would be public record if this amendment doesn't pass. I also like to note that autopsies are done in hospitals, and those are considered medical records and not for public disclosure, those autopsies that are done. Whereas if this amendment does not pass, then even though I'm doing a medical autopsy, it would be for public disclosure. So there'd be a discrepancy between what happens in the hospital and what happens in the medical examiner's office.
I understand. All right, let me just open up for questions. Anyone have questions about the Dash 2s or the Dash 3 amendments for Senate Bill 87? Not seeing any. Council.
Sure, Mr. Committee. Do the Dash 2 and Dash 3 supersede the Dash 1?
Yeah. I don't know where the Dash 1 came from. That was not one that we were interested in. Dash 2 and Dash 3 are the ones that OSP is supporting.
Yeah, I think the Dash 1, whoever got it, hasn't shared it, at least with the chair. So that means it probably doesn't have too much success in moving forward. All right, so chair is going to entertain motions on first
I was going to say, I'd like to hear from the ACLU.
Thank you, Chair Brzozinski, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. We are in agreement with the DASH 2s. They reflect the discussion that was brought here to this committee a number of weeks ago with the concern. What transpired after that was in this small work group some discussion about the issues around autopsies and the court decision about whether they're a public record. I would ask the committee not to move forward on that today, providing us a little bit more time to discuss the dynamics. I know that the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association have just been alerted. I spoke to Tom Gallagher about this. We're concerned in general about the incremental exceptions or prohibitions put in the public records. And it's there's so many bills this session, and as you all know, in the previous sessions, and it becomes longer and longer. I want to make it very clear that I think there would be very limited circumstances where autopsy should be readily and easily available. In fact, we would argue that it should be considered, as we want to have discussions about whether it's put in the exceptions, the 501 exceptions to the public records, where there has to be a high public interest showing. I want to get a little bit more information from the medical examiner folks in a discussion about the fact that they expect an increase to 800. Arguably, it has, until this case, it was, one could say it was presumed not to be a public record. On the other hand, folks might have also presumed it was a public record, and the court simply clarified that. So it's hard to know the previous perspective, but we're just very reluctant to do a hard and fast rule. I think in most cases, autopsies are not sought, or if there's a dynamic case going on, the family members will share it with the public. But we are just concerned about the one or two rare exceptions where, for some reason, it's critically important to the public interest to have the information and it is otherwise not available, and that would be the 501 exception to the public records law. This proposal, unfortunately, doesn't allow us to, if that's where we end up and if that's where the committee ended up, this statute doesn't allow that flexibility. It only allows you in the DASH 3s to close the door permanently because the 501 public records law isn't a part of this bill. And what you're looking at amending is another provision of the law which would simply say it's not a public record except for the following individuals who have a right to it. So I would ask the indulgence of the committee to have a little bit more time to bring in all the players who I think have some concerns about public records, and we may come back and be on the same page or not. I'm just not sure yet.
Okay. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go ahead and entertain a motion on the DASH 2s, and then we'll talk about the DASH 3s. So the chair would take a motion on the DASH 2s.
Anything different from...
I'm fine. Okay. I move that we adopt the DASH 2 amendments to Senate Bill 87.
Senator Bonamici moves the DASH 2s into Senate Bill 87. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Questions on DASH 3s? I have a couple, but I want to see if anyone wants to start before me. All right. Andrea, my thought on this is that the perception that I take away is that everyone thought these were confidential records, that they were not public records. And the reason I would say that is because that's the position I heard that the medical examiner's office has taken prior to that decision coming down, and that they have, in fact, and correct me if I'm wrong, have, in fact, denied opening up those records to other people. It's just that someone challenged it, and at the point of challenging it, then everyone becomes aware of it. We can't move the bill out, so it is going to give you an opportunity to have some discussion at this point, because I guess the only thing I want to ask counsel is that if we don't adopt the DASH 3s, are we going to find ourselves in the same situation that we come back here not having the fiscal to be able to move the bill again?
As chairman of the committee, the DASH 3 amendments can be sent to legislative fiscal. I think they already have a copy.
Okay.
I would hope that we would have a fiscal at some point.
Okay.
I can't say when, but...
Will they do a separate analysis of the bill with the DASH 2 and the bill with the DASH 2 and the DASH 3, or
Or do they just combine them into one analysis so that if we decide not to do the dash threes, they have to go back and start all over again and just do an analysis with the dash?
Chair members of the committee, Senator Bonamici, from what I can gather, that what happens when they have a bill, they get the bill, they analyze it, they send it out to the agencies, and I believe they follow the same process for the amendments. So I take it that they will send the amendments probably one at a time back to the through the same process and channel.
All right.
Mr. Chair, if I may, name is Renee Bryant. I am the legislative coordinator for the Oregon State Police. Just for the information of the committee, I know that our budget manager did forward information to LFO last week. I believe it was probably Thursday or Friday, so that may be why there's a delay in getting it up to the committee.
Okay. Why don't you check, Council, with LFO and see if they're doing a breakout? Because when I look at the two amendments, it's the amendment number three looks to me is the one that's going to have any costs tied to it based on whether it is open or closed records, because that would kick in potentially the request and the FTE to handle any of the request of processing those amendment or those requests for those records. So other Senator Whitson.
Just a comment, Chair Pozanski. It seems to me that the doctor client privilege should succeed the death of the patient. I mean, it just seems that way to me. In veterinary medicine, unless they changed their rule very recently, even a necropsy of an animal is privileged information without a court order. So I don't I don't see this.
Yeah, and I'll be very frank, that's where I'm leaning right now. And so if there's some type of narrow exception that everyone can agree to and want to bring it back to the committee for our consideration, I'm willing to entertain that. But from my perspective, that I've thought about this Meyer and I talked about this, and over the weekend I've thought about it, and I just haven't come to, let's say, grasp or understanding as to what is going to be those situations that are going to be so paramount that we need to open that up to be a public record, where I would assume that the people that are in the position to get the public to get the record could make it public on their own, instead of having someone that's not as tied or connected to the deceased to be basically making a general request for it. So
Zonsky, members of the committee, I think it would be rare, but there are times when there could be a death related to government action, law enforcement action, where there isn't family members, and there's compelling public interest to understand what happened, and no one is stepping forward as a family member to bring that forward to the public to understand in that particular circumstance. That's pretty narrowly, and that is where we're thinking, and I think for the most part, family members in police shootings and other sort of public events like that probably do make it available. But it's just our caution when we close doors permanently and don't provide any exceptions in the rare but unfortunate circumstances.
But I guess my perspective, I thought that door was already closed. And now it's, you know, it looks like the courts say no, it wasn't. So now we're looking at maybe either going under the past practice or setting up an example. So the other part of your, I guess, homework on this will be to bring back what's happening in other states. I want to know what the list is as to on a regular basis as to whether there's some general rule throughout the country to allow autopsies to be quote-unquote public records. Any other questions or comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to go back briefly to Senator Witt's comment about the privilege, which we talked about when we had the prior hearing on that. And I just want some clarification on how that was dealt with in the dash two, because if the privilege survives death, is that dealt with by just saying that it's not waived when the records are turned over? Which, anybody want to opine on that?
Yes, that's how we perceive it, that they have given us the records for this narrow reason, for the medical examiner to determine cause and manner of death. And we added that statement that there are other the privilege is not waived. For instance, if they go to court, they don't have to reveal those materials just because they gave them to us. And that was my understanding, that when we put that in, that would cover that problem.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Thank you all very much for coming forward. Renee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Renee Bryant, Oregon State Police. I just wanted to ask a question of the committee with respect to the Dash 3 amendments. A specific reference to the public records law and said that the records of the medical examiner would not be disclosable under Chapter 192. LC drafted the amendments and did not make that reference. They just said that the information would be confidential. And I just wanted to point that out to the committee to ask whether or not there is a value in making reference, should you determine to go that way, to the public records law.
Well, I think that's something that can be looked at while we're waiting for the feedback on it from LFO on the Dash 3s. And if y'all are going to be meeting again, you can discuss it. And if necessary, if we need some other type of amendments, we need to get those ordered up as quick as possible, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anything else? All right, we're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 87. And we're going to go ahead and open up a work session on Senate Bill 89. Council.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 89 comes to you from the State Fire Marshal's Office, exempts persons possessing a permit or license issued by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives to possess, store, and manufacture explosives from requirements to register with the State Fire Marshal. You have the Dash 2 amendments in front of you, which basically changes clarification as it relates to what's required of the United States Department of Transportation. You may remember Senator Boquist had some suggestions on this, and this basically takes care of that. It does so by going over to page 3 of the bill, and on page 3 of the bill deletes lines 3 and 4, inserts comply with the requirements of the United States Department of Transportation. So each person who drives or has charge of vehicle transporting explosives must possess a certificate under pursuant to ORS 48235, and then insert and comply with the requirements of the United States Department of Transportation or to comply with.
All right, that's the Dash 2s. I'm looking at the Dash 1s. It looks like it's...
Chair, members of the committee, the Dash 2 supersede the Dash 1.
All right.
It's a little clean way of writing.
Yep, that's what I was going to ask. Okay, so at this point, we can adopt the amendment, but we can't move the bill. So, Chair, we'll take a motion on the Dash 2s.
Mr. Chair, I'll move adoption of the Dash 2s into Senate Bill 89.
Senator Dingfelder moves the adoption of the Dash 2s into Senate Bill 89. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 89. And we will open a work session on Senate Bill 93.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 93 allows the State Court Administrator to enter an agreement with the United States Financial Management Services and Internal Revenue Service for the purposes of attaching federal refunds in order to satisfy debts the taxpayer owes to the state courts. Allows the courts to add a fee to cover costs associated with collecting on a tax refund, takes effect upon passage. Chair, members of the committee, I don't believe there are any amendments to this bill.
All right. It appears to me at this point that we are waiting for the documentation, so I'll go ahead and close the work session on Senate Bill 93 and open a work session on Senate Bill 94.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 94 authorizes the Director of the Veterans Affairs to require fingerprints of certain specified purposes for the purpose of requesting state or national criminal records check. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments in front of you. Basically, what the ones do is it clarifies that this bill applies not to all employees of the Veterans Affairs, but to employees in the future who are hired into certain positions, promoted into certain positions, or transferred into certain positions. The Dash 2 amendments, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, basically they remove the emergency clause and they come from the ACLU. You have representatives from both the ACLU here and the Veterans Administration.
Okay. And Andrea, why don't you come on up? And who's here on for the veteran? Why don't you, one or both of you come up? We got room for both if you want. So let me just ask on the dash ones. Everyone's comfortable with the dash ones. From what I understand, it's the dash twos that we're going to have a little discussion on.
Chair members of the Kitchen Council, I don't know where I am, it's Ranch, Chair Polonsky.
Right. It's Monday.
Members of the committee, Andrew Meyer, legislative director for the ACLU of Oregon. Yes, I say slightly with caution on the dash one, so that it does appear to limit both employment as well as the concern we had, which was the contractors and vendors, so that only those under the subsection 2 of section 1 with control over access to information and onward are the ones covered. It appears to do that in the change in lines 12 and 13. The director may request fingerprints of persons described in subsection 1 of this section. It's just a little bit awkwardly written, but hopefully that we can all be assured that's intent.
Hopefully not awkwardly interpreted, huh? Mm-hmm.
Right. It is, I think, as I was listening to the testimony from 2 weeks ago, as I think Council Taylor pointed out, that Section 1 is sort of this free-for-all and Section 2 is this qualifying, and they could have blended, I think, a little bit better just to not ever make that distinction to begin with. If you want me to talk about dash 2s or wait until
Why don't you go ahead on the dash 2s and then we'll come back over.
As my testimony a few weeks ago in writing indicated, we'd really prefer not to have the emergency clause provision because there is a rulemaking process that needs to take place. I was listening to the testimony last night, and I know Senator Whitsitt had asked the person testifying on behalf of the department about the retention of fingerprints, and I need to express some concern when the testimony back was that they are retained. They are archived, I believe, was the testimony. And that is incorrect. And I've talked with others in the department who understand these fingerprints are not retained in any way, but are, in fact, destroyed either at the FBI level or if they're returned to the state police, so that there is no retention of fingerprints. In light of that, I would urge this committee just to proceed with caution, giving the department enough time to really go through the rules in ORS 181, I believe 534, the requirements, make sure we do it correctly, and then proceed.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paula Brown. I'm the Deputy Director at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. The department supports the Dash 1 amendments. We don't believe the Dash 2 are necessary. However, they don't cause the department concern that we would raise an objection. We have a history of writing good rules. We believe there are some good model rules out there to use in developing the department's rules. But again, if it's the pleasure of the committee to adopt the Dash 2s, it doesn't create any great difficulty for the department or significant concern.
Okay, so questions on the dash ones or the dash twos, discussions? Senator Whitsitt?
I'm still struggling a little bit why we're fingerprinting volunteers. That's a bit of a problem. And then I understand we're waiting for physical.
Yeah, we're waiting on all of them.
So we are specifically waiting for a fiscal on this one. We're waiting for a fiscal on this one?
Yes.
Okay. Because it's the previous statement was a minimal fiscal, and I question how that, you know, I mean, unless the department can fingerprint somebody for nothing, that's going to be hard to do.
Yeah. Paula, you want to give us a little perspective as to why volunteers are included?
Absolutely. Chair Przanski, Senator Whitsitt. The department has a number of volunteers specifically related to the Oregon Veterans Home. And, of course, they have access to these vulnerable individuals who are in need of nursing home care. We do have an Alzheimer's wing, so we have patients, residents at the home who have dementia and Alzheimer's, and those volunteers have access to those residents, and in doing so, they also have access to their rooms and potentially would be in contact with information that could, in the hands of the wrong volunteer, could be used inappropriately, and we feel that we have an obligation to ensure that we've got folks coming into the veterans' home, whether they're our employees or volunteers, that don't have some criminal background past that creates a risk to our residents.
Okay.
Thank you. Just a comment.
Yes.
There was a great article in the Wall Street Journal a couple weeks ago, about a half a page, but it can be distilled down to two sentences. It's really worthwhile reading, but the two sentences are, Americans are very proud of their freedoms, and we have passed so many rules and regulations to protect those freedoms that we no longer have a freedom.
Sure.
I'm wondering if that, when we start requiring all kinds of, attaching all kinds of requirements to volunteer, I think we're treading on, and I'd have to look at this one more carefully, but okay. In general, that's a concern of mine.
All right, thank you.
Chair Pozonsky, Senator Witz, if I may, as an organization, as a person who the last 10 years has spent a lot of time looking at these laws around criminal history, background checks, it's my understanding and expectation that volunteers are always constrained down and should be under this bill to the level of those groups who are listed, in other words, handle billing collections, have the mailroom duties, in other words, are stepping into the shoes or have similar duties of the employees who are the ones who must, unfortunately, be fingerprinted for a criminal history check. It is not my expectation that this law says if you are a volunteer, period, you are subject to that. Only if you have, in other statutes and other agencies, access to vulnerable people, access to medical records. It's been my understanding, it's been my reading of the statutes, that when they include the language of contractor, vendor, or volunteer, it should be greatly limited based on the specific circumstances. So I hope that helps a little bit. I share your concern as we continue to expand this. And just to note that on the other side of the building, there's legislation for allowing individuals through the Department of Human Services to consent to have their fingerprints retained, which we are quite alarmed by as we are now starting to move beyond sort of the protections that we've been talking about for years. So I just put that in, but hopefully that will at least let you understand. Volunteer here is the same as every agency licensing board and department that has it in their formulaic language.
All right, and just for the record, Paula, if you'd be so kind to just put on the record that your agreement with the interpretation Ms. Myers has given us on the dash ones as it pertains to volunteers.
Yes, Chair Pozonsky. The department, it's not our intent that any volunteer, it would be volunteers who could be, who meet the criteria described in the bill.
All right, thank you. All right, so at this point, I guess the chair's perspective on the dash twos is that if we don't need them to be going through an emergency process, it seemed like it would be much more orderly to go through the administrative process, which is going to need to be done anyway. It's a matter of whether it's going to be temporary rules that are expedited or through a more systematic way of regular adoption of rules. So the chair is comfortable with both of the amendments. And I'm not sure if we as a committee are ready to adopt them now, or do we want to wait?
I support both the amendments. Also, Mr. Chair.
Senator Wissett, based on what you've heard, are you comfortable enough to move forward on the dash ones?
Yes.
All right. So with that information, the chair would entertain a motion as to the dash ones.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee adopt Senate Bill, the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 94.
Senator Bonamici moves the dash one amendments into Senate Bill 94. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee adopt the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 94.
Senator Bonamici also moves the dash twos in the Senate Bill 94. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And we'll go ahead and close the work session on Senate Bill 94, waiting for the paperwork. And we'll open up the work session on Senate Bill 238.
Chairman of the Committee, Senate Bill 238, from the Estate Planning Section of the Oregon State Bar, and enacts the Uniform Guardianship and Protective Proceedings Act. You have the dash one amendments in front of you, which are lengthy, but basically they substitute conservatorship for protective proceedings. That's basically what they do, Mr. Chairman of the Committee.
All right.
I see David Nebel here, and I see Ryan Shutterly, and I assume they're both
If either of you want to come up to give us any perspective, if not, it looks pretty much just taking care of some, let's say, topographical and tweaking issues, then we'll go ahead and move forward. Chair would entertain a motion for the dash ones.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the dash ones in Senate Bill 238.
Senator Dingfelder moves the dash ones in Senate Bill 238. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. We'll close the public, the work session for Senate Bill 238, and we'll open up our last work session for Senate Bill 373.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 373 comes in from Senator Bonamici and makes an employer liable to an employee when the employer fails to pay a support enforcement division in a timely manner, wages being withheld. You may remember we had testimony at our work session where this gentleman was at work. His employer was, for the purposes of cash flow, not forwarding the money due to the support enforcement division, and this man was then subject to all kinds of fines, fees, and penalties, and this is intended to correct it. You have a dash one amendments in front of you that clarify that a person served with a holding order is liable for failure to pay or not to pay as required by the order.
Okay, I'm going to entertain a motion on the dash ones.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 373.
Senator Bonamici moves the dash ones in Senate Bill 373. Open it up for discussion. Any objection? So ordered. And that will conclude the work that we have before us. I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on Senate Bill 373. We took care of our possible committee bills. Is there anything else we need to take care of on the record?
Chair, members of the committee, no. Not that I know of.
All right, so we'll close for our work for today. We're scheduled to be here tomorrow. I believe our start time is 8:30. Thank you for being in attendance.